good evening, a good Erev Shabbos to everyone, whether you're in the city, in the country, or listening while traveling. It's a special schuss to be able to share Divrei Torah with you tonight. Tonight I would like to dedicate the shir that I heard this evening was Nifter, an Adam Choshev Talmud Chacham of Nosson Tzvi Baran Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who was a tremendous hashpa, tremendous influence on the whole Cleveland community, as he was Manal in the Masifta of the Hebrew Academy, Yizichwe Baruch. My Rebbe Reb Gifta used to say on the Mishnah, says, Hamahalach Baderach, someone who's going on the way, Vishayin, and he's learning. Umafsik mi Mishnasai, and he stops his learning, V'oimer, and he says, Ma no ilon zeh, how beautiful is this tree. Ma no nir zeh, how beautiful is this plowed field. Since he stopped his learning, Ki'ilum ischaya benafshay, it's like he forfeited his life. The Farshim say, because when you go on the derech, and you have to be learning, that's a protection from anything evil to befall you. But my Rebbe of Gifta pointed out, obviously if he was going and learning, and then all of a sudden he stops and he says how beautiful the trees are, how beautiful is this plowed field. He obviously was mafsik mishnasai. He obviously took a break from his learning, and he stopped his learning. Why does the Mishnah have to tell me mafsik mishnasai? Isn't that obvious? So the Rebbe Reb Gifta explained that there's two ways to say mano ilan zeh. A person could say, okay, I learned enough. Now it's time to study the beauty of nature. That's a mafsik mishnasai. There's Torah, and then there's the natural world. But there are others who by them, when they see the beautiful world that Hashem created, it gives them an inspiration. It increases their learning, and it gives them enthusiasm for Torah and mitzvahs. Then he's not a mafsik mimishnasai. Then the manah ilon zeh is part of his aliyah Torah, part of his greatness in Torah, part of his enthusiasm for Torah. When the summer comes, some of us at least, but all of us in a certain way, go into mano ilon zeh mode. And it's a time to reflect, and a time perhaps to rethink our lives as we set it coming towards Chodesh El and Yom Narayim. I want to start off with a little story. It was in the times when El Al was flying on Shabbos. And the Chachamim said, and Gedolim said, one should not fly El Al. There was a boycott from the religious Jews not to travel on El Al because they were Mechal Shabbos by traveling and flying on Shabbos. So Mishulach in America, who collected money, hardly working, trying hard to collect a dollar here, a dollar there, till he amassed a sum that he felt he could return back to Eretz Yisrael. But his ticket was for El Al. He called the Michal Yehuda Lefkowitz, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, to ask him what he should do. He was told he should purchase a new ticket. Okay, he'll purchase a new ticket. That's what the rabbi said. That's what you do. But he found his amazement that the only ticket that would get him home for the Yom Tovim was in business class, which was quite expensive. He had worked so hard to amass this little amount of money, and now he should give so much of it away just for a ticket. She called him Michal Yehuda again. And Michal Yehuda said, no, we must stand by our convictions, even if it's easier on El Al and it's cheaper on El Al. No. And he bought a business class ticket. And the truth is, the story could end there. How a person has to take a stand, even though it's not convenient and even though it might be expensive. The story happens to have a nice ending. Yes, he met a rich businessman in first class, and the person became a big donor, so it has a nice, happy ending. But that's not the point of the story. The point of the story is that a person has to sometimes take a stand and stand by his convictions, have a passion for what he stands for, and to act accordingly. The Sefer that we're learning in these past few weeks in Shul is Sefer Bamidbar. A Midbar conjures up an image of a wilderness, a place without civilization, like the wild, wild west in American law. And as the Yidden travels to the Midbar, we sometimes don't understand what it means to go for 40 years and not be settled in one place. And the Pasuk tells us sometimes they were there for one day, sometimes they were there for a year. They never knew where they were going, they were coming. And to be organized and to be disciplined was one of the avodas that had to be done in the Midbar, to bring Seder, to bring Malchus, to bring order into such a situation. We go through the parshas, though. In the last few parshas, there's tremendous limudim. Let us start with parshas. The Yidden did not feel confident about going into Eretz Yisrael. They felt the need to have to send Meraglim. They have to get validated that the trip to Eretz Yisrael is worth it. So they send the Meraglim, and the Meraglim come back with a horrific report. And the Meraglim come back and tell them about the dangers, and tell them about the enemy that lies within fortified walls. Oy vey! Panic breaks out. We want to go back to Mitzrayim. What is Hashem doing to us? It was a night of Bechiya Shel Chinam, a night where they cried in vain, the night of Tisha B'Av, which became a night of tears for generations. Two people stood up, Kalev and Yeshua. We'll focus on Kalev, because the Pasuk focuses on Kalev. And the Pasuk tells us, the Chomenatzai Lo Yeruah, those that made fun, those that shamed Hashem, and those that didn't believe, they will not see Eretz Yisrael. But Avdi Kalev Hoysa Ruach Acheres Imoi Vayimale Acharai. Kalev had a different spirit, and he was filled behind me. And the Pasuk is a little bit hard to understand. What do you mean, Hoysa Ruach Acheres Imoi? So Rav Leib Chasmei, shouldn't the Pasuk have the Avdi Kalev Shaloi Hoytzi Dibal Eretz? That he did not speak bad about Eretz Yisrael. That he spoke good about Eretz Yisrael. What does it mean as Ruach Acheres? What does it mean by Yimole Acharai? He filled behind me. So Rav Leib Chasman says, the greatness of Kalev is not just what he said about Eretz Yisrael. The greatness of Kalev is that he defied the spirit of that moment. That he was able to stand up against the other Meraglim. He was able to stand up against Klal Yisrael that was in a frenzy, in mass hysteria. He was able to see the truth. He was able to see the emes. And he said, no, Tavar is my night. Nothing to fear. And they wanted to stone him. They wanted to physically attack him till Hashem Shechinah appeared. Avdi Kalev's strength was Ruach Acheres Imoi. Where did he derive such strength? We see that Kalev went to Davin by the kever of the Avos. He went himself to Chevron. He was Mishtateach. He spread himself out on the kever of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yankov. What is the greatness of the Avos? There's an interesting Mishnah that says that the Dairis, the generations, from Noach to Avram, Machisen Uboyim, they were doing Averis, Ad Shabo Avram Avinu, V'kibel Schar Kulam, and Avram received the Schar of all the generations. All the schar that they could have attained went to Avram. What is that? Out of all the things that Avram should get, he gets everyone's schar. So Nishiva Shalom and Rebbe Yemei Bloch goes with this mahalach as well. For every guy in the world, for every other opinion in the world, is a nisayon, is a test. Could you imagine how many tests Avram Avinu had? Millions upon millions of people that did not believe what he did. That right there by the Zara. But Avram Avinu was a maimon. Avram was kibbul schar kulam because they created such a great nisayon for him that he received a reward equal to what they all would have gotten. And the Sivi Shalom says the air was polluted from them. Their avodas created a pollution in the air. And Avram had to fight that as well. So when Kalev needed to daven to Hashem and daven that he should be spared the eitz of the Meraglim and not to fall into the evil counsel, he goes in his mishtateach on the kever of Avos, because that's what a yid is, and that's what an av is, and that's what Kalev wanted to be. He wanted to be able to stand up and take a stand, keneged what he held was the wrong Ashkafa, and indeed he was rewarded as well. Let's move on to a different parasha in Bamidbar. Parashas Korach. Korach begins a movement we'll call the equality movement. Kulam Kedoshim. Indeed, a very enticing idea. Everyone is a Kaddish. Everyone can be a Kayin. Sounds very contemporary. I don't know if the Yidden fell for it or not, but there is a hint that the Yidden were a little bit convinced. HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, he bodlu mitoicha eid of achalaisam. I want to destroy the whole Klal Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu turns to Hashem and says, Ha'ishach yechta v'akol am yiktaif. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, only one person in Navera. Why are you punishing everyone? Oh, Hashem says, okay, I'll only punish Korach. Well, what? Hashem didn't know that it was only Korach. Zok to Ramban. Ramban tells us a tremendous insight. He says at this point, Klal Yisrael wasn't sure anymore. They came to see what's going to happen when the 250 Nisiei or Eda bring a carbon. Who is going to be victorious? Is it going to be Aaron or Korach? So Klal Yisrael weren't sure. They didn't take the stand that they were supposed to take. Instead, they said, I don't know, maybe Korach, maybe Moshe. That chet b'machshava, the chet of such thought, the chet of not being able to stand up for Moshe Rabbeinu, they deserve to be destroyed. On that, Moshe Rabbeinu said, since it all came from Korach, and Korach started this whole movement, so there is such a way of praying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he should look at it like it's one person's avera, and therefore Hashem forgave Klal Yisrael. But in essence, 100%, they all weren't sure. They all were scared to take a stand. To be able to take a stand, you need two things. You need a clarity of vision, and you need a little bit of nerve. But there's another point that one has to realize when we discuss this issue of taking a stand. What is a person? What does it mean a person and an animal? Shmuel Ibn Chasson says the person has the power of bechira. A man has the power of choice. He was given a seichel and a das to analyze the situation, act accordingly. While an animal, of course, only works on instinct. When a person allows himself to be led astray, either by the popular mode of the times, some other movement, or his own passions for his own earthly desires. When that happens, the person is forfeiting his bechira. He is no longer an Adam. He's giving away that precious power of choice. There's a tremendous pasuk at the end of Sefer Dvarim. It says, Uvocharto b'chayim, you choose life. Many of the commentaries say, choose life. What else would you choose? If you have a choice between life and death, shouldn't you reign a sadu v'nechaz yem is a chayvas, a mavas, a toivas, a ra? What are you going to pick? Of course you're going to pick life. Why should you pick death? So Leib Chasman says, a person sometimes thinks he has no choice. This is the situation I'm in, so I'm stuck. I have to think like this. I have to act like this. So the pasuk says, no, uvacharto b'chayim, you always have a choice. It might not be the choices you want, but you always have a choice. And he brings an interesting proof from Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov Avinu is studying in the Beis Medrash of Shem Ve'Ever. One can imagine in their mind where there are hundreds of people there, thousands of people there, beautiful Beis Medrash, sitting and learning Torah. Then he has to run for his life. And he runs, and he only has a stone. And he says, the Evan Hazois Yia Beis Elikim. This is my Beis Medrash. This is your Beis Medrash. It's a rock. But that's all he had, so he chose what he had. A person has to be so directed by his seichel, by his convictions, that even in the worst matzavin, bocharto b'chayim, he doesn't forfeit what he stands for, and he continues on that path. The story is told. There was a younger man who was learning in the Ner Yisrael Baltimore Yeshiva, and he felt it was time to leave Yeshiva and spread his wings, perhaps get a job in the field of Chinuch or Rabbanus, and he went to tell Rav Rudiman Zecher Tzadik Livracha that he's going to leave Yeshiva. And Rav Rudiman told him, you know, it's better to stay in yeshiva and be a cook than leave the yeshiva. A cryptic remark. He went back and he told his friend, but at the end he decided to leave. And as Hashgacha would have it, he wound up in Eretz Yisrael. And being a Rav in Eretz Yisrael meant that he had to serve also in the reserves and had to be part of the army. After his training, there came time to swear in. Now, normally they swear in the oath of loyalty by the Kaisel. And whether one holds of the army, doesn't hold the army, one of Eretz Yisrael, but at least it's done by the Kaisel. It's given a religious touch. But this time, they decided to go out into the desert. They lit huge bonfires. It almost was paganism. And this Rav was standing there, and he felt very uncomfortable. But what should he do? He has to give his allegiance to the army. This is the last step in his training. So he stood at attention and listened to the captain or the general or the corporal, whoever it might have been, who was talking about the topic and how great it was to be part of the army. Suddenly there was a tumult. And from the back came a soldier, obviously a Frum Yid. And he comes, he says, I cannot accept the oath of allegiance here. This is the Israeli army. This is the Jewish people. This feels like an Avodah Zarah place. Instead, I don't want to accept my allegiance here. And they told him, fine, you can accept your allegiance wherever you want. It doesn't have to be here. The Rav was standing there. He's highly embarrassed. He says, here, he's a Rav. He didn't say anything. Who is this Yid? So he runs over to the Yid and he says, who are you? And he says, I'm the cook in the Panovich Yeshiva. And because he was in the Panovich Yeshiva, he wasn't frayed at the edges. His hashkafa was clear. He was ready to act. And he was ready to stand up and say, no, this is not the way someone is makabel any type of Mesiras Nefesh for Klal Yisrael. You have to stand up. Sometimes, even though deep inside we know something's wrong, we don't have the nerves to stand up, whether it be because of the situation around us, because of our environment, or because of our upbringing. Let's move to Parshas Pinchas, shall we? In Parshas Pinchas, we end off in Parshas Balak with one of the most terrible times in Klal Yisrael. B'nai Smoiv and Midian unleashed their ladies on Klal Yisrael, and Klal Yisrael falls prey to the Atzas Bilam. And we find that Klal Yisrael starting to live with non-Jews. And before they live with them, they take out an Avodah Zarah. And they didn't actually serve Avodah Zarah. 24,000 Jews. Dying begins all around. Moshe and Aaron are standing in front. Hey, my boy, and they're crying. What's going to be with Klal Yisrael? Look how low Klal Yisrael has fallen. Vayar Pinchas. And Pinchas got up. And he saw, and he took a spear. And when Zimri ben Solu came in front of everyone, wanted to live with Kozbi Basur, claiming that, who cares now, it's a Midianite, but you, Moshe ben, didn't you marry a Midianite? And Pinchas takes the spear, goes first to Moshe ben Aaron and says, doesn't it say that if one wants to live with a non-Jew, someone who has righteous indignation, someone who's a kanoi, is allowed to kill him? And Moshe says, yes, go ahead. And Pinchas kills Cosby and Zimri, and with that, the Magefa stops. Do we understand in our mind even what kind of danger Pinchas was in? The Gemara says there were many miracles necessary for Pinchas to do his act, to be saved. Everyone was against Pinchas. Pinchas saw one thing, says the Medrash. Everyone's doing it. There's a tremendous darkness. It's choshech. Things are happening beyond control that one would never believe would happen to Klal Yisrael. Now is the time to remember halacha. Yes. Pinchas' eyes were attuned. Oh, here we have someone who's living with a guy in public. That person has to be killed. Pinchas saw, he saw things in a different light. Pinchas was able to defy the atmosphere and take a stand. Vayokom, and Pinchas got up, vayar, and he saw. What's interesting to note, Pinchas, according to Chazal, is Elio HaNavi. Years later, when the Yidden are serving Avodah Zarah, Elio gathers all the Yidden together and he says as follows, what is with you? Why are you jumping? If Hashem is Elikim, go to Hashem. And if the Baal is Elikim, look Lachrav. Klai Yisrael doesn't answer. It's a startling question he's telling them. Startling exclamation. If Hashem is Elikim, go to Hashem. If Baal is Baal, are you giving him a choice, Eliyahu Navi? Isn't of course Elikim is Elikim Hashem? What do you mean, Luchul Baal? So I heard over from Gedolei Olam, they told him like this. If you are someone who stakes an opinion, if you are someone who has a position, then we could discuss it. If I'm right, you'll come over to my side, and I'm sure I can convince you. It's not a problem. But if you are someone who does not have any opinion, who floats through life, today it's Hashem, tomorrow's the Baal. So you're not someone I can convince. You want to go to the Baal? Go to the Baal. Then we'll talk. Go to the Baal. Now let's talk. Stake out. But if you are someone who doesn't have the claim on a Baal Bechira, you're just going with the tide, then I can't talk to you. Even if I convince you it's for today, what will be tomorrow? So Pinchas, the one who saw things so clear, looks at Klai Yisrael, says, Lama atem poischem ashtesi ipim. Why do you keep going from one side to the other? Why do you not have the clarity of thought? Fantastic. Kalev, Avram, Pinchas, tremendous, tremendous people. What does it have to do with us? The very essence of a Jew is someone who can be Hein Am Levodod Yishkain. We dwell ourselves in the world. We have to realize that that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. Let's take an example. Let us assume that someone has a problem with talking in shul. He's been talking in shul for the last 15 years. Now he decides he doesn't want to talk in shul anymore. It's very hard to take a stand and change. But the first time someone comes over and speaks to you and you don't answer him, and the second and third time, you've made a tremendous impression. Impression upon yourself, an impression upon all those that are with you. Story is told that this fellow never came to shul on time. He always came for Kriya Satayra. One time he came on time, and everyone gives him a hard time. What happened, Hashi? Your alarm clock went off on Shabbos? You had a fight with your wife? You couldn't sleep? You have insomnia? He never came on time again. Sometimes we have to be very strong. The first halach in Shulchan Aruch says, La yisbayish mei amaligim Allah b'avaydis Hashem yisbarach. When it comes to avaydis Hashem, you can't worry about people, would say. Of course, like Pinchas himself, he first went to ask Moshe v'Aaron, and he followed the ways of the G'daylim. Let's take another example. Let us assume that there's something going on in Eretz Yisrael. Person says, there's not much I could do here. Does that mean he should shelve it? Does that mean he shouldn't think about it? Does that mean he shouldn't talk about it? Does that mean he shouldn't have pain? Why shouldn't he have a feeling? Why shouldn't he take a stand on Kedushas Eretz Yisrael? And so on and so forth in a person's personal life. A person has to feel the pain. A person has to feel he wants Kedusha and not be scared. There are people who are non-judgmental. Non-judgmental doesn't mean you shouldn't have an opinion. Non-judgmental means you shouldn't judge the other person. But you yourself, tolerance doesn't mean that everything's okay. Tolerance means I understand where another person's coming from. But for myself, for my family, for those around me, as much I could spend Torah and Kedusha, I have to try to spread it. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Shabbos that when it came to the Churban Beis HaMikdash, first HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, write a tuf on the heads of foreheads of the tzaddikim and a tuf on the foreheads of the Rishayim and kill the Rishayim and spare the tzaddikim. And the Sutton came and said, what do you mean? Why are these different? They didn't give Musa. The tzaddikim didn't give Musa to the Rishayim. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, yeah, but the Musa wouldn't have helped anyway. But the Sutton says, they didn't know that. And Hashem says, you're right, we're going to kill the tzaddikim first. Because the fact that they didn't give Musa wasn't just a question they were over the Avera of Achev Tchichas HaMisecha, because there's a mitzvah to help your fellow man do mitzvahs. It didn't bother them enough. If they themselves would have been on the level, if they themselves would have felt the pain of the Avera, they would have said what had to be said, regardless if they knew if the person would listen or not. So as we end our little Divrei Torah tonight, We have to feel atam nitzavim v'nei Hashem. We have to stand up for Hashem. There's a beautiful pasuk in Shir HaShirim. Amishkavi balelois, on my bed at night, a person is mavakish hashav nafshi. He's looking for what he loves. He doesn't find it. So after Bleib Chasman, what happened? A person has a moment of peace, and he starts looking through his life and all the things that he does. Sha'ava nafshi. And he realizes there's nothing to it. It's not what life is all about. It's time for us to come in contact with the Emes. Time for us to have a clarity of vision of what's right and what's wrong. Time for us to stand up for our convictions. Not to be a Pesach Ashtei Sipim, but to go B'derech Hashem, to follow our Gedolim. In Moisei Lachayaf of Anashim, if you don't know where to go, Tzilacha B'ikvi Atzayin. Thank you for listening, and have a good Shabbos.